Welcome to Eastern Standard, a radio magazine about interesting people, places, and things happening in the Commonwealth. Eastern Standard is a community service of Eastern Kentucky University, produced with the support of 1, the Alltech Ideas Conference, and Dynamics Productions. I'm Tom Martin, and in this hour, we'll hear from Joseph Anthony, author of a historical fiction about Robert Charles O'Hara Benjamin. As publisher of the Lexington Standard, a newspaper serving the African-American community of turn-of-the-century Lexington, Benjamin was a fearless personality in a fearful era. And we have interviews with the authors of books about the Choctaw Academy in the Scott County village of Great Crossings, the nation's first federally funded Native American school, and another book making the case for character assassination on behalf of Cherokee legend Ned Christie. But first, it's a given that if we hope to hold our own as a competitive economy and country, we need to adequately educate an innovative workforce. We hear this often here in Kentucky, yet some of the largest per-student cuts to education in the country have been happening right here in Kentucky. What are the consequences? As the president of one of the state's public universities, Eastern Kentucky University's Michael Benson, is in a position to know about that, and he has now shared his observations in a new book, College for the Commonwealth, A Case for Higher Education in American Democracy. The book was just published by the University Press of Kentucky, and we've invited President Benson to discuss some of the highlights with us. Greetings, Dr. Benson.
Hello there, Tom. Thank you for having me.
In the foreword of your book, West Virginia University President Gordon Gee notes that it's no accident that you employ the word Commonwealth in the book's title. How is that term doing double duty here?
Well, first, because we take, if our history, you look at our history from 1792, we in effect kind of broke away from the Commonwealth of Virginia. So we kept that appellation to describe our state. So College for the Commonwealth, yes, denotes this connection to the state of Kentucky, the Commonwealth of Kentucky. But as he points out, which I think is very astute, College for the Commonwealth, the common good, the common benefit. And the argument we try and make, and I hope we make it forcefully, is that public higher education in America is viewed much more now through the lens of a private benefit as opposed to a public good or a public benefit, public, you know, a commonwealth, if you will. So he points that out and says, if you try and make a case for higher education, we all benefit from as many people having as much education as possible.
Since 2008, going back to the Great Recession time, the funding of public higher education in Kentucky has been cut by something like 30%. Has this been a consequence mostly of a severely underfunded state pension system, or are there other dynamics at work as well?
I think there are some other dynamics, but I would be disingenuous to say that the pension system has not had a profound impact on what our state can and can't do. You know, I commend those that are trying to tackle it, because it is that Gordian knot, and unless we fix it, what's going to happen? All those state agencies that have been the beneficiary of state appropriations, those funds are not going to be there, because they're going to be addressing the really acute challenge that we face in our state with the pension system. So it's been, an amalgamation of several things, Tom, but the pension system has certainly played a role.
Pew Research Center and Gallup surveys that were published a couple of years ago in 2016 showed sharply declining public support for colleges and universities. And in Chapter 6 of your book, you acknowledge this and you cite skepticism rising mainly out of increasing costs and student debt. Thoughts on how these dynamics might be addressed?
Well, the gentleman who runs the polling in this particular area is a guy named Brandon Bastide, and I've heard him speak several times. He's very articulate. He knows his stuff, and Pew, I think, is really dialed into, and Gallup, into this vein of public opinion that higher education is not making a very good case, a very compelling case of, is the investment worth it? Is the investment kind of on two fronts, the investment from states into infrastructure, into state aid programs, into salaries for employees, faculty, and staff, on the one hand, and the other hand, the investment from individuals, is it worth it for your son to go to college today? I mean, is that degree in philosophy going to pay a benefit if he can't get a job? And I use philosophy because I would argue that philosophy is as good a major as you can get. The ability to read and read critically and think and express yourself. They can come through many different disciplines, but I chose philosophy just at the top, kind of the top of mind right now. So he, Brandon, is dialed into the fact that it's both the public investment from states, but also parents, individuals, consumers themselves saying, is it worth it to me? The economy is doing well. Why don't I just go get an hourly wage job that will pay me a good salary? My argument is the best investment you can make in yourself is to get as much education as you can.
Back in the early to mid-2000s, and might have continued on, there was almost a tectonic shift in Kentucky towards STEM disciplines, and almost at the expense of everything else, maybe at the expense of humanities and the arts. I don't know if there has been a shift back in the other direction or not, but should there be?
Well, I've been in this long enough, almost a quarter of a century now, to see that pendulum kind of swings back and forth. Mm-hmm. And when the economy was really humming, and it's still humming, but when employers say, look, we need more people in these disciplines, and then hired says, well, we could be responsive by producing science, technology, engineering, math, some states have added an A to that acronym and included arts. I would argue, and you can look through the rankings of Fortune 500 companies and look at the backgrounds of a lot of those CEOs, ones that studied psychology, sociology, political science, history, English. You can get training and develop your mind, to, as I said, I don't mean to be redundant, but to think critically and make good decisions. You know, Jay Willard Marriott, the hotel tycoon, said, I hire friendly, I train technical. You can really be trained, I believe, to do just about anything. But the ability to communicate, to write, to reason, to be articulate, to be empathetic, to be thoughtful, those things can come from, I would argue, a rich immersion in the liberal arts as the kind of traditional liberal with a small L.
Are we seeing less favorable treatment of colleges and universities by politicians and by policymakers?
I think so, and I don't know if you can single them out as the kind of the root of the challenges we face at all. Although you look at state declining declines in state support, I think at the top of the queue is Arizona. They've had a reduction of something over 50% over the last several years. You know, we're in the top third, but we're not as bad off as some states. So I get it. You know, I've been up at the legislature long enough here and in my previous positions that there are demands on a ever-increasing or expanding pie. There are more people that need more services, whether it's Medicaid, whether it's, you name it. And there's only so many slices to that pie. So legislators have to make hard decisions. The argument I would make is make a decision on the front end as opposed to treating the treat the symptom, not the problem. So you can either make an investment now in your people, in human capital, by getting them as much education to educate them from not having to take advantage of those state services that cost states a great deal of money.
Some years ago, there was an argument out there, a pretty popular argument, that, well, academia could do its share by trimming some fat here and there. But now, here in 2018, it seems to me as though, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there's no fat to trim.
We've gone through a pretty rigorous process, as you know, Tom. I mean, you've followed it closely because you're from here. Eastern has gone through some difficult decisions that we've had to make, some cycles of having reduced staff, reduced programs. There is not a whole lot left. Now, that said, ever-increasing kind of federal mandates require that we have certain positions that maybe we didn't exist 10, 20, 30 years ago as it relates to federal financial aid and Title IX and reporting. And all those things are good. I mean, I'm not arguing that we shouldn't have them. But universities are complex places. It's a complex organism that requires a lot of care and feeding. And I would say that, there are some things that people point to. Why do you need an associate director of assistant this or that? And, you know, I get that. And they have that in business as well. But universities are not businesses. They're a different model. But we can still be efficient and we can still I believe, be held accountable, which we should be.
Murray State's Board of Regents recently unanimously approved a revised statement on state performance funding. It notes that the board had envisioned a performance funding model that was based on quality and not quantity, but the model now in place, they say, is quantitative and volume-based. Your thoughts on that view?
The model, I believe, does need to be looked at. It does need to be tweaked and I think adjusted to be better suited to apply to institutions that have unique missions, whether it's a Moorhead, a Murray, a comprehensive like Eastern.
What eventually happens to a state like Kentucky after steadily reducing investment in, if not disinvesting, in its system of public higher education?
Well, I think you stand the risk of walking back or undoing all the investment that has been made. And I'm not talking about just investment in people and programs, which I would argue are some of the most important. Investment in infrastructure. And if we don't get some funds to help shore up the existing structures we have on campus, in addition to building what our students, our faculty, and staff need, you stand the risk of literally undoing all that investment that's been made. And it is literally billions of dollars. And our state is not unique. You look at public higher education and the percentage of state kind of budget pies that's dedicated to them. And it's not an inconsequential amount of money. And so if you don't keep up with it and keep those buildings current and in good working form, you stand to undo literally decades, if not centuries, of investment in what you've tried to build up.
On the other hand, what positive outcomes can you envision from strengthening the state's investment in public education?
Well, the corollary here is that that investment, particularly in people, the more you invest in your people, the more they're going to want to stay here, Tom, the more they're going to get a job here. They have a skill set that employers are looking for in Kentucky. And there's a kind of that proverbial collateral impact that is so positive across the state. They're going to pay payroll taxes. They're going to be good citizens. They're going to vote. They're going to participate. They're going to run for the PTA. They're going to do all those things that come from having as much education as you possibly can.
Dr. Michael Benson will be talking about and signing his book, College for the Commonwealth, A Case for Higher Education in American Democracy, at the first annual Kentucky Book Fair on Saturday, November 17th. And you can get the details and learn more about this week-long festival organized and hosted by Kentucky Humanities online at kyhumanities.org. And Dr. Benson, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up after the break, efforts to restore the historic Choctaw Academy in Scott County and to correct the historical record about Cherokee legend Ned Christie. I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on the WEKU Network of Stations.